Humanoid robots have long been an aspiration of science fiction and futurism, from robo-butlers like Rosie the Robot to working-class cleaners like Wally. At the most recent CES, dozens of companies, large and small, were showcasing their robots for the home, as the humanoid robotics industry is expected to be worth $38 billion by 2035. At their most ideal, robots could provide us with automation capable of performing repetitive and dangerous tasks, freeing humans to focus on more creative and strategic work. At their worst, they take over the world? So what's realistic and what's just advertising smoke and mirrors? And what are the sort of ethical issues we should be realistically concerned about ahead of our incoming robo-brethren? Domo arigato, doomers. This episode is called, Oh No, Autonomous... I knew I was going to do that. Okay, hold on, there's a hard one. Oh No, Autonomous Humanoid Robots! The end of the world is coming fast. But the good times never wanna last. Oh no, kind of thinking we're all doomed. But anyway, how the fuck are you? Happy Doomsday is a happy Doomsday to you. Happy Doomsday, Lauren.
Happy Doomsday, Renfro.
How's your Doomsday?
It's pretty good. It's a sunny day. I've got some stuff lined up for my 15 mentees. So I'm feeling I'm feeling pretty good. I have not doom scrolled all week. So things are looking up.
You're not doom scrolling and you're inspiring the youths.
Yeah.
I said that like my cousin Vinny. The youths.
The youths.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm feeling That's pretty great. Good. How about you?
Pretty good. I went to the Bernie AOC rally yesterday.
Yeah.
Just cool, but it was very, it was a long time standing outside.
Are you pumped?
Fuck oligarchy.
Were you pumped? What was the message? I've been seeing some things here and there about their tour, but like, what's the messaging? Yeah. What, like, they're on the tour, but there's so much shit happening in the White House. Like, what's going on?
I would say their message was surprisingly hopeful and uplifting. I was expecting it to be a much angrier environment. Because that's just how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
But their message was very much like, we need to get people on our team and we need to just like not take any shit. And all the like gaslighting, everything, just don't take an inch of it. There was a lot of very direct fuck yous.
But what's the purpose of their tour? Is it just to spread proper information?
Well, mostly they're going to swing states. So this LA stop was kind of atypical. They're mostly doing like Idaho and Ohio, and they're going to Bakersfield next. They're mostly going to red districts and swing states. And I think they're trying to capture I'm not really in the demographic for this. I think they're really trying to capture people who are recently disaffected by Trump. Who've kind of like who voted Trump, but see all of this insanity right now. And they're going, maybe I'm having second thoughts. And I think it's trying to get those people on board. I'm already more leftist radicalized than anything they're saying at this rally. So I didn't really need to be there. And I've actually never really been to a political rally before of any kind. And I think the things that I always thought wouldn't appeal to me about it were correct. It's like, because everyone's like cheering or booing like it's a WWE thing. So you can really only fit in like bumper sticker level sentiments. Oligarchs are bad. Boo.
I mean, do we really think it's going to be effective?
I don't know. I think they did a pretty good job of talking about stuff, but it's hard to say because I think the people they're trying to capture are a stubborn crew, but they've been very successful in the swing states they've been going to. They've been getting record numbers of people. So I hope so. I mean, I think any effort to do something active is positive. I wouldn't say I personally got much out of going to the rally just because, yeah, I'm already about as hardcore left as you can get and already very much all we talk about is how much we hate billionaires on this podcast. So, yeah, it was really cool to see everybody out and getting motivated. It was supposedly the biggest rally they've done on their stop so far, but it's LA. So, you know, preaching to the choir and that's why. But it was cool. I love Bernie. I love AOC. See him in person was really neat.
I was very tired because I was standing outside for hours and hours. Well, anyways, that's what I've been up to. You want to get into it? What's weird, when I was looking up stuff for this episode, I found there is so much 80s pop culture around robots. I didn't really thought about Short Circuit, Terminator, Star Wars, Blade Runner. It's like massive 80s robot culture and pop culture. Because I think that was kind of the turning point between it's in sci-fi to we can kind of build these. They can't really do much. It's mostly flash and mirrors, but...
I want to say the robot you just showed in Rocky is similar to the one they have in the Korean barbecue restaurants in my area.
Oh, I've seen those. Oh, they have them there?
Yeah.
I've only seen these online. They got a little robot that brings you your food.
Yeah, but it moves so slow that like everybody, all the waiters are walking around it very quickly.
Oh my gosh. I have something to say about that exact thing in this section. How slow these things are.
I mean, I get it. It's carrying food, so it wants it to be careful, but it's like, you're sitting there watching this thing carry your drinks and the food here, but six waiters have walked past it. It's like, annoying. We can't be moving faster, guys.
Yeah, I'm always getting annoyed by those little robots. We have them in LA that are delivering food, and they always like don't use the crosswalks right. They're always in the way. They stop and they freak out, and then cars are having to go around them.
Oh, I haven't seen a freak out. I've seen it not be able to go up the driveway.
Oh, I've seen them go into the middle of the crosswalk and then just stop and then like go forward and backwards, and then the light turns green. And they're like, oh, help me.
Poor robots.
Poor robots. They give them little eyes and make us
feel bad for them.
So there's plenty of talk right now about automation, AI, all these things. But I want to have a weird, very specific episode about specifically humanoid robots for consumer use. Think like I rewatched the movie iRobot recently for this episode with Will Smith. You ever see that one?
A robot cannot harm a human being.
Yeah, I've seen your commercials.
We knew we could trust them. He knew we were wrong.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I did. Freaked me out.
Yeah. Still mostly holds up. Pretty decent movie. Mm-hmm. But you know, in that movie, it's like everybody's getting their own little personal robot that lives in their house. Will Smith's the only one that's like, I don't like these guys. And basically everybody's like, you're a bigot for not liking these robots. But then it turns out he's right.
No, that makes sense that we would be more specific. There's so many robots out there, so much robotic use. This will be a very long episode if we try to cover them all. So let's go humanoid. Let's go to the freakiest corner of robotics.
Yeah. And it's also, I feel like most people are talking about AI. And at recent events like CES and things, there were all of these companies trying to shill all of these weird, either human-like robots or... at the very least, or robots that are meant to be in your home and help you with home things. And that's what I want to pinpoint for this episode. These weird, like, they call them cobots, or at least that's what they call them in industrial spaces. You work with them, you know, cobots.
Okay.
So before we get too much into stuff, I want to tell you about the specific event that kind of kicked off me wanting to talk about this, which I'm sure you saw some stuff online last year, 2024. Tesla had a little PR event with investors where they rolled out both their like auto taxis, their little self-driving taxis, but then they also had these little robots. They call them their Optimus robots. They were serving drinks for people and they were like mixing and mingling. Supposedly, they didn't really well advertise the fact that they were not autonomous. So some people felt tricked by it. But when you watch the videos, I don't know how you would not realize they're being controlled by another person. But that's how they worked, was they had a person off site or not directly by the robots remotely controlling them and using a microphone to talk to people. And while a lot of people somewhat correctly pinpoint that as just kind of like smoke and mirrors that Tesla uses to create false promises and inflate their stock by being like, look at all this sci-fi tech.
Yeah.
I think there's actually a much scarier thing that's already in the tech they're using.
Oh, no. I was waiting for where the doom would show up. This feels like it's it.
Yeah. So Tesla, of course, known now for making ridiculous promises that they have no intention of keeping up because it's all just about boost in that stock. So will they ever get to the point where they're meaningfully using fully autonomous robots like in the way that they were demonstrating at this event? Maybe, maybe not. But what we have right now are robots that are getting much more dexterous and responsive to remote controlling. And I want you to think about how we could use that, unfortunately. We could use that now to offshore service jobs that you would have previously thought unexportable, like hotel staff. Imagine you got one of these little robots controlled by someone getting paid dimes in Guatemala, remotely controlling a robot in some Hyatt, and it's folding sheets and it's taking stuff elsewhere. All of these like little working class service jobs would be easily exportable now if you've got these remote controlled bots.
Yeah.
So I thought that was fucked up and something people weren't really taking from that event that they should have been.
Well, if they're investors, chances are they're not even thinking about the working class. They have enough money to invest in something like that. Then they don't. They're looking for ways to basically displace. Like, I think that they're less about the morals or the slower progress of introducing tech to the world and more about just like, oh, this is this cool thing. I can make a ton of money on it. Like there's some countries where you're not allowed to introduce certain tech because it displaces too many jobs. And so they have to get you. They give themselves time to respond to the new tech before introducing it. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anyone related to Tesla is interested in that process.
Yeah, I also don't mean I'm using the Tesla event as kind of like what made me think about this, but it's the tech in general. Like,
yeah,
there's a whole slew of companies making humanoid robots and most of them are kind of shit right now. But I think the barrier past them being shit to being used is lower than we think. That's what I was saying when you mentioned how slow the food delivery robots are in your restaurants. Mm-hmm. I think if a robot performs half as well as a human, but you only have to pay it a quarter as much.
Yeah.
We'll just have shitty, slow robots.
Yeah.
Bumping into shit and giving us towels.
Yeah.
So that people talk a lot about the enshittification of things right now. And I think that's really like possible with these humanoid robots is that they're going to be significantly worse. They're going to be significantly worse than their human counterparts, but because they're potentially so much cheaper, it doesn't matter. We'll just be surrounded by shit technology. Anyways.
Well, that's a nice thought.
Yeah, I mean, already we're surrounded by self-driving taxis, these little delivery robots, delivery drones, Roombas. Like, it's a matter of time till we got them walking up and down our stairs on two legs. It's not going to be right away, but I mean, watch some of those videos from CES. They're getting there.
Yeah, they're getting there. They have dogs that people walking the robotic dogs in.
Ooh, yeah
in public.
They got like consumer ones that people just like jog with them and stuff now. I'm like, why don't do
why
that.
get an
Apple Watch. Yeah, be normal. So mostly in this episode I want to focus on the tech and the ethics. I'm not going to run you through like all the robots that exist on the market and all the things they do. We're just going to talk kind of about ethics and philosophy around these things and how we move forward. So first off, when we're talking about ethics of robots, obviously you got to start with Isaac Asimov, Three Rules of Robotics.
Mm-hmm.
That's the classic one. That's the one they reference in the movie iRobot, which is a loose Isaac Asimov adaptation, technically. So yeah. Probably the listeners have heard of this. In the 1940s, Isaac Asimov introduced the three laws of robotics, which were this. One, a robot may not injure a human being or, through inaction, allow a human being to come to harm. Two, a robot must obey orders given to it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law. Three, a robot must protect its own existence as long as such protection does not conflict with the first or second law. That's it. Pretty simple, pretty straightforward, that the ethics regarding robotics should all be about benefiting humanity, never hurting humanity.
Yeah, I guess it depends on how they people. The problem with that is it. Everybody likes to distort the definitions of what harm is. Like they may only decide that harm is physical, but if harm is economic, then they might not. It might not qualify.
Good point.
Within that, so like if you take the displacing jobs of taxi drivers or taking self-checkout, whatever use of tech, you could consider that harm because you've now made it impossible for the same amount of people to have access to those jobs. So I think it's problematic because people change the definitions of what harm is.
That's a really good point. Yeah, I think self-driving cars are already breaking Isaac Asimov's rules.
Yeah.
In more ways than one. I wasn't even thinking about that.
Have you been in one?
I have been in one. My friend got on the beta testing for the ones when they first came to LA, and it was super weird. It worked pretty well, actually. But I think in general, I'm against them. I think that there's too many irregular situations that a car can encounter, especially in a city like LA.
Yeah.
And I don't know if we'll ever be in the place where human judgment isn't more important. So I don't know, but it was weird. We walked in. It's got all these spinning LiDAR lights on the top, little spinning LiDAR cameras. And the one thing it did bad was the second we got in and shut the door, it like took off. We didn't even put on our seatbelts yet.
Oh.
But a little voice comes on. It's like, welcome to the car. And then you've got a little screen, a little touch screen in front of you, and you can change the music and different settings. And the steering wheel, we were in the back seat and the front, so you can just see the steering wheel turning all by itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy.
I don't like it.
I'm sure you've seen the nightmare video of them all honking at each other in the parking lot in San Francisco.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
Yeah, if viewers haven't seen that, there was a video going around. There's a parking lot where they all go to at night to charge and not be on the streets at night. And they're all just honking at each other. They're all in a congestion of their own making.
Their own traffic jam.
Driverless cars just honking at each other and people in the neighboring buildings being like, what's going on out there? It's just a bunch of driverless cars honking at each other and it's 4 a.m. and I can't go to sleep. What a nightmare.
What a nightmare.
And also for fans of the movie Holy Motors, that's a deep cut maybe for some of our listeners. Exactly like the ending of Holy Motors. So you guys have, I'm sure most of the listeners are familiar with that theory, but let's go on to the next one called instrumental convergence. Instrumental convergence is a concept that posits that an intelligent agent with seemingly harmless but unbounded goals can act in surprisingly harmful ways. Basically, it's just that like machines are not bound by the same logic and ethics that humans are. They're machines, right. And we cannot predict what they do. And what they do could be harmful in ways that we're not even thinking about. So the classic thought experiment for this is the paperclip maximizer. Have you ever heard the paperclip maximizer?
I have not.
So here's the idea of the paperclip maximizer. Let's say you build this little AI machine and you say, hey, machine, I have a paperclip company. I want you to streamline our company, make it the most efficient and effective way of making paperclips. Better paperclips, lower the cost, use your AI brain, and then you send it off. And then the AI says, okay, well, I got some little ideas here and there. We're going to tighten up some things on the assembly line.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly make things a little more efficient, a little more efficient. But then things kind of spiral. Eventually, the paperclip maximizer is like, you know, the cost of these materials is too high because it's being controlled by other companies. I should create other AIs that will then try to monopolize those companies, and then we can have access to those resources. And then it starts by building up all the resources, and then it starts making a paperclip so efficiently that it's just like an insane amount of paperclips that there's not even enough buyers for them. And then people go, okay, we got to shut this down. And then the AI is like, no, see, like, I understood that if humans tried to shut me down, that would conflict with my goal of making as many paperclips as possible. So I've cloned myself and you can't stop me. And there's too many AI maximizer paperclip clone AIs, and we're going to keep going. More paperclips. And then eventually the AI said runs out of iron. There's no more iron to be mined on the planet. And then the AI says, well, where else is there iron? There's iron in human beings and there's iron in animals, and then it starts mining the people for their own iron, and then eventually the earth is just a wasteland of paperclips. Anyway, it's just an absurd little thought experiment. But the idea being that you saying, like, make as many paperclips as possible, you have a different sense of logic than a machine. And a machine's going to be like, well, there are no boundaries. Even if you try to set those boundaries, there may be ways around those boundaries that you wouldn't have even conceived of because you're not a machine, right?
Yeah.
You have ethics and logic that are separate from ones and zeros.
This is why this just shouldn't happen.
It's almost like there's 100 billion sci-fi stories telling us this already.
Yeah, right? I don't know.
But I also like that visual of the Earth being destroyed.
Earth being paper.
Mountains of paperclips.
Human paperclips.
Yeah. And it would be something that innocuous, wouldn't it? Obviously, that would never happen. It's just a thought experiment to demonstrate the idea of instrumental convergence. The convergence point between human interests and machine goals.
Yeah. It kind of makes me think of when you're dealing with a toddler or dealing with a child that you're trying to teach them a thing and they find a way around the thing that you taught them that you didn't think of because now you're an adult and you're like, oh, that was actually really smart. And you laugh at it, except these are machines and now you die. So it just made me think of that.
Well, the biggest difference is that the AI is very efficient because it's just electricity. It comes to those illogical or harmful consequences way faster because it's optimized.
Yeah,
to do so.
It's not going to be distracted by something that happened in the corner of its eye or a song or a snack. Like a toddler where they might be singularly focused on the thing that they want in that moment, but that singular focus dissipates immediately upon receiving a snack.
Yeah, they don't have
versus a machine. It is singularly focused on the goal until the goal is complete.
Yeah.
And that is a scary thought when you think about it. Feels very T-1000.
Yeah, or I was going to say HAL from 2001 A Space Odyssey. You know, afraid I can't do that. So last little ethical framework I want to give to you is a little story from the 1960s. This is actually kind of a throwback to my research from the hypernormalization episode. This was a topic that was talked about in the documentary called Hypernormalization. In the 1960s, there was a professor at MIT who created this chatbot called Eliza. The way that the chatbot worked was basically, it was kind of a parlor trick. It was, do you remember Smarter Child on AIM back in the day?
Oh.
Did you ever talk to that? AOL Instant Messenger?
No. No.
Oh, well, maybe some listeners will know. There used to be a chatbot on AOL Instant Messenger back in the 90s or early aughts. I used to talk to it all the time. It was just a fun little chatbot, but it worked kind of similarly to Eliza, which was that it wasn't really AI. It wasn't really processing and understanding things. It was taking keywords from what you put in, reworking it, and sending it back to you. But I think what they found with Eliza was the bar for people to fall for that as actual communication was way lower than they thought.
It always is.
It always is. Well, I mean, like we've said in some other episodes too, humans are always just looking for humanity. We see two dots in a line. We see a face. We prescribe a personality. It's so easy for us to anthropomorphize things. It's like actually a struggle not to because it's built into us. But the way that Eliza worked was through this, it's called pattern matching and substitution methodologies, where basically it took keywords out of your sentence and then it re-put them into another sentence kind of in a way that's like a bad therapist. Like if you were saying like, man, I've been really overworked recently. And then it's like, tell me more about what's happening at work. You know, that's basically what it's doing. So the guy who created it, Joseph Weizenbaum, when he first created it, he didn't think that much of it. It was just kind of an interesting little project he was trying. And the first person he had test it was his own secretary. And he just said, hey, just finished this little chatbot thing. You want to, could you try it out? Tell me what you think. She was on it for maybe 5 minutes, went to his shock. She turned to him and said, would you mind leaving the room?
What?
She had already made such an emotional connection with this thing. She was like using it as a therapist.
What the hell was she going to do with this chatbot?
I don't know. Maybe it got steamy in there. I don't know.
Whoa, leave the room?
Literally 5 minutes, she was like, I'd like some privacy with this chat bot.
Whoa. I'm sure he would have access to whatever she did with it.
Probably, yeah. He's literally a researcher.
Yeah, sure, like, oh my God. It. Oh my God.
But he didn't expect things, that. He didn't think that.
Of all the things I thought you were going to say, leave the room.
Could you give us some space? Could you give us some privacy?
Oh my God.
We got a thing going.
Jeez.
Yeah. The secretary was really not a rare instance. He found out that a lot of people he showed this to really reacted to it in that kind of like anthropomorphized emotional way. Turns out people really like having themselves reflected back to them like a mirror. That's all it was doing, was just taking what you said and throwing it back at you. Weizenbaum later wrote, I had not realized that extremely short exposures to a relatively simple computer program could induce powerful delusional thinking in quite normal people. The chatbot ended up almost being more of a psychological study than a technical feat.
Yeah.
It really showed how people react to it.
So he's saying people who have little exposures to computers are more susceptible.
He was saying little exposure to the chatbot. He was just saying it doesn't take much. It only takes a little bit of exposure to something like this for otherwise grounded people to like give up that objective understanding of how the machine works.
Yeah.
To just buy into the emotion of it, the conversation of it.
Yeah.
It's weird, right? But I feel like we've all experienced this in some way, especially now with ChatGPT and things being much more common, that are much better at processing things.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of perils to take away from that. Like the more conversational a chatbot is, the more people are trusting of it just inherently, even though it's a machine that's not bound to the ethics of the human language. It's the conversational language that is being used to bolster it. I think that misinformation that comes from a chatbot, people are more willing to believe just because it's coming from a source that feels personable.
Yeah. Well, okay. I'm trying to think about my susceptibility to it. And I think maybe I don't use chatbots enough or ask it things that get personal, I guess. I'm asking it usually pretty pointed questions about stuff. And then I go and research it. I never ask it for its opinion on stuff or anything. Like, I've seen people ask it like, you know, I want to talk to a chatbot about war or like the concept of war and debating the ethics of it and stuff like that. So there are people who go to it for that. I've never gone to a chatbot for that reason. So I don't know how to gauge my own susceptibility to something like that if I don't go to it with those kinds of queries. But I mean, what do you think your susceptibility is? Do you think you've kind of fallen into that? I mean, I'm not going to ask for time alone with it.
Yeah, I don't use ChatGPT and stuff very much at all either.
Yeah.
Every now and then I'll try to use it for almost more experimentally than like usefully. The only useful thing I figured out to do with it is when I can't remember the name of a movie. It's incredible at that, actually. Way better than Googling stuff. Sometimes I have a few times been like, can you write an intro for a podcast about this? But it just feels like someone bullshitting me. You know, everything's so kind of vague and flowery language that's just kind of like wasting time. I never actually use any of that. But I think there are, I don't know what the percentage is. I think it'll be a time till we tell, but I think there are a lot of people that aren't using it for functional things. They're using it for emotional things. There's been a lot of talk about using AI for therapy. And I don't know. I don't know if that's great or not.
I'm going to say it's not great. I mean, the thing is about using it for therapy is like, if people can understand that nothing is free, that a lot of times your data is what you're paying for it, why would you put that kind of personal information into a chatbot knowing that it has to go somewhere?
Yeah, it's not safe putting anything you put in ChatGPT is going to be used for research, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I won't say that as a full allegation. I don't know their terms of service, but I'm sure it's not like...
I'm pretty confident
feeding that into ChatGPT is telling a licensed therapist.
Yeah, I'm pretty confident. I don't think it has to abide for by any HIPAA violations or anything like that, like or whatever boards therapists have to abide by or ethics that they have to abide by. Why would it? It's AI. And if you decided to bare your soul to a computer program, then you're kind of relinquishing the confidentiality of that for you, even if it's for use of training AI better. It's mm-hmm. being used for something. So it's actually quite scary that people would be giving that kind of information to a chatbot.
Yeah.
I only use it for very specific things, sometimes very silly things, just to see what would happen. Just like I'll ask Alexa for something just to see what happens.
Yeah.
But remember the last episode on journalism, I asked it like, what's the future? Like, what hope do we have in journalism? And it gave its little answers, but it repeated some of the answers. So it's just,
yeah. That's the thing, it's all regurgitating. Sometimes it'll give you stuff that's, you're like, oh, that's a lot better than I expected, but it is probably regurgitating something from a previous source. And that's why it sounds better than a
robot.
Have
you ever asked it? I've even asked it the same question in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And it will give me an entirely different set of answers. Yeah.
I would not use it personally for an emotional connection.
No.
On purpose.
I think that's quite dangerous.
Anyone gravitating towards it for therapy or companionship should be very wary of that slippery slope.
So what I'm getting from the ethics section is argument enough to just stop the development of this stuff.
It's like I said in a previous episode, we should have never invented that wheel, you know?
Should have never invented that wheel.
We should all go back. This ethics section, I mostly just want to give us all like a perspective baseline going forward. The laws of robotics is, I think, just a good framework for trying to build rules. But really, instrumental convergence is sort of a counterpoint that says we can't really build rules.
Yeah.
And Eliza is just a check on our own human weakness of trying to emotionally connect with inanimate objects.
Yeah. I mean, well, we have been known as humans to create technology that is to our own detriment.
We love doing that.
I'm talking about guns. In case you wanted anything more pointed, I'm talking about guns.
Yeah, maybe the gun of the 21st century is AI.
Is a robot.
Mm-hmm. So next up, I want to talk to you about some of the tech ideas that go into building these humanoid autonomous robots. First is, if you've done any reading on AI, a term you will be familiar with or have at least heard, AGI. AGI is kind of the gold objective for any AI company. AGI stands for Artificial General Intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
It's the hypothetical point at which artificial intelligence exceeds human intelligence in a large generalized fashion, not just like for one specific task.
Mm-hmm.
And how do we measure AGI? If an AI has achieved AGI, it's not really math. It's pretty subjective, but researchers have laid out some bullet points for like things an AGI should have. So if an AI is capable of AGI, it should be able to reason, use strategy, solve puzzles, make judgments under uncertainty, represent knowledge, including common sense knowledge, plan, learn, communicate in natural language, and also be able to integrate all of those skills into the completion of any given goal. So that's just kind of a general term that you'll see come up. That's just basically saying like, it's as smart as a human. It's AGI.
Yeah. I mean, the common sense bit is a bit subjective, right? Because it depends on where you're training this AI and who's training it and like what varied information it's getting, because it might have more information than the average person. And so it's not common knowledge or it has less and it's not common, you know? Yeah.
Well, I think, I don't know if this is entirely what that rule is going for, but in my head, like imagine you tell a robot to synthesize a molecule and it can do that. But then you go like, hey, break a leg. And then it breaks somebody's leg. You know? Well, then it doesn't have much common sense. You know? Common sense would be like, oh, that's an expression.
Yeah.
And so in the I think common sense can even be like not overthinking.
Yeah. But what does a machine determine as overthinking? But and then my other question is, like, how does a machine define reason?
I don't know.
I got nothing on that one.
I don't know.
How does it define reason?
I mean, we're the ones defining reason and then hoping we can instill it into a machine.
Exactly.
And yeah, I mean, like, we as humans operate our reasoning on multiple different levels with a subjective. Mm-hmm. I did like that one rule where it says it has to be able to make. It has to be able to make decisions with a reasonable level of uncertainty, because I think that's really key. It's not just like, it's not just choice A, choice B, where they're obvious, where it's like there's actually a very uncertain subjective quality to the decision. That's what human decision making is.
Yeah. I mean, I'd say that that's a huge amount of human decision making. That's a huge amount of human decision making.
I'd say on that whole list of AGI, that's probably the number one most difficult and abstract one to get. Learn, accomplish tasks, talk in a natural language. Yeah, we've seen those things.
Yeah.
But be able to like consistently make good choices under difficult uncertainty.
Yeah. Also, what is a good choice to a machine? And it makes me think about your example about the stupid delivery robot getting freaked out in the middle of this crosswalk. Mm-hmm. It is not demonstrating AGI.
No. Or even in a scarier way, people have proposed sort of the trolley problem for self-driving taxis. That imagine you're in a self-driving taxi and it's going down the street and suddenly there's a child in the road. And in that split second, either the self-driving car can run over the child or it can divert into a wall, killing the passengers. You know, if a human was in the seat, they would have that same decision. But there's something much more upsetting about an algorithm making that decision, whether or not the innocent people in the backseat who are not in control of the machine.
Well, we would immediately blame the machine. I think we're more forgiving if there was a human in the driver's seat. We don't know if the kid just darted out, like, but for the machine, they'd say like, it should have seen it coming a mile. Like, I think we're less forgiving of the machine. We would immediately blame the tech.
I've also heard people talking about how AI gives a lot of companies sort of like plausible deniability. Like, it's kind of what Elon Musk is doing right now. Although I think he's kind of hidden the fact that they're using AI, which I believe they're using AI to make all of these dumb cuts. They're just like automating things. And that's why they're making so many mistakes. And maybe in a lower capacity by a person that's not as unlikable as Elon Musk, they could be like, oh, we're so sorry. The AI made a mistake. When really a human should have to face consequences and be held accountable for the thing that the AI is doing. But you can kind of offload blame to this automated system you've created. It's kind of like a bullshit way of obfuscating your actual decisions.
Yeah, which is crazy because there's humans behind the AI. So, of course, you would be to blame.
It's a bullshit excuse, even if it is entirely on the AI. You made that. Some of the humans still cause that. And I think most of the time right now, it's actually an excuse when people blame stuff on AI.
Yeah.
Because it's not even good enough for you to be using it that way. You should know better. Okay, so the other big thing I know all of our listeners have heard of, the Turing test. Turing test is basically just the idea that like you can ask a machine a series of questions and the point at which it's reasonably convincing as a human, it's passed the Turing test. I think the wording I wrote down was, if a considerable portion of a jury who should not be an expert about machines are taken by the pretense. So basically,
I call bullshit.
Oh, you don't like that definition?
I don't like that definition at all. I don't like that concept. I knew what it was, but hearing you say it like this, I'm having a visceral reaction. If we already know that people can be taken by a chatbot within 5 minutes to the point where they need alone time with it, it's going to be very easy for a jury who has never dealt with one to be convinced that what they're hearing is human.
I don't think it's a bad definition. I think it's just a much lower bar. We always thought of it as this like this high goal, and it's actually incredibly low bar.
It's incredibly low. It's incredibly low. And I think it's problematic.
I think Eliza passed the Turing test by that definition.
In flying right? colors. Yeah. With flying colors. I don't know. Maybe I guess what I'm saying is like, I feel like the bar needs to be higher because maybe that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. I think so. Because, the Turing test is just basically the first proposed idea that it's like, let's say there's a test at which a human falls for a machine being a human, which valuable ideal. But
every day in the comments, people are falling for the fact that these people are humans.
Good point.
Every day.
People fall for bots. And I all the time am looking at these like TikTok comments that people are arguing. I'm like, guys, it's a bot.
It's a bot.
You're all getting angry and worked up and arguing with this comment that's not real, obviously.
Yeah.
People don't have very good detection for these things. So, I think it's a useful concept, but I would say we've blown the fuck past it. And it's long been heralded as like some kind of high bar. It's also been, I think, always brought down to very like things that are kind of actually rudimentary, like a machine beating someone at chess. It's like, that's not. If anything, that's more machine-like than human, in my opinion.
Yeah,
that's
like
the emotion. Once you're emotionally connected to it, I think that's really a better bar for passing the Turing test than being good at chess. That which is math.
I mean, the computer beats us constantly in solitaire chess. You name any logic game, it's going to beat you.
Yeah, but that makes sense. You can break those games down to math, which is why I always thought it's funny that that's considered like a part of that conversation. Like, no, Eliza, that is what you should look at as a Turing test. Just a secretary being like, hey, excuse me, could I have a little
can I get the room?
This?
That's insane. I'll never forget that.
Yeah. Oh, but
I'll never forget that.
You did give me a good segue because I was looking up Turing test equivalents online and I found a fun list of harder tests to pass or different tests of measuring basically whether or not it should be considered human adjacent.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one's called the robot college student test, which is basically just if you can take a machine and enroll it in a university, taking and passing the same classes as humans would and obtaining a degree, then it's passed the robot college student test. And that's happened. You can feed essays and
that feels easy.
It's easy. That's already happened. LLMs can now pass university degree level exams without ever attending a class. Yeah, that's not too surprising either. Next one is called the employment test. A machine performs an economically important job at least as well as humans in the same job. And that's, of course, that's kind of broad. So that's definitely already happened. AIs are now replacing humans in many roles from fast food to marketing. Here's my favorite one. The IKEA test, also known as the flat pack furniture test. You give an AI all of the parts and instructions of an IKEA flat packed product, and then it has to assemble it. Has not yet been passed.
What?
That's my IKEA.
That's
it takes a lot of dexterity, and you got to read those instructions that are all visual.
Hilarious.
I think it'll take a while.
So that actually makes me think that certain jobs in construction, like electricians and all the people in construction, I would imagine we would have a hard time doing those kinds of jobs because there's so many pieces.
Yeah, I see a lot of people talking about construction being a place that robots are going to come in, but I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think for your average construction worker, they're very replaceable. I think there's one, too much room for error, and two, just too much like specific dexterity and things that, I mean, I know we were talking earlier about the enchidification of things. But I don't think that a construction worker that works half as well.
Yeah, you can't build a building like that.
It doesn't really matter if your robot can run into your door delivering towels and nobody gets hurt. But building a sky rise poorly.
Yeah.
Not so good. So I actually don't think robots are going to be too. I mean, I think we'll have like automated tools that are maybe robot like, but not like construction workers.
I agree with that. How you manage your logistics. Right now, logistics in construction is fairly antiquated how it's done, but there's a ton of moving pieces. So I think you can probably create a tool to help streamline that, but I don't think you'll get rid of a logistics manager.
Yeah, I definitely think there will be a new era of like AI and robotics involved in construction.
Yeah. I don't think you're taking anyone's jobs. Yeah.
Yeah, at least not too many. But I would like a robot to build my IKEA furniture because that is a pain.
I would love that, but apparently it's a failure at that. So it looks like I'm still doing better than the robot.
The future is IKEA delivers something to my door with a little robot that builds it in my porch and then I bring it in. Because I'm not letting it in my house. You build it on
wow,
the porch.
Now
robot, you build that table on the porch.
Now you sound like a bigot.
Yeah, no, I'm a robo bigot. You don't come in here.
Use the back door.
I don't want your dirty metal claws in here.
I love how you're from Texas, but the version of you that hates robots is like some
New York.
Some moly.
Yeah, I don't know. That just felt like the vibe. Hey, your robot, get your robot paws off my IKEA shelf. Yeah. So yeah, that's my favorite one, the IKEA test. Here's also a good one that I think is harder. It's called the coffee test.
Oh.
Imagine you're in an Airbnb and you're like, oh, fuck, how do I make coffee? What machine do they have? Do they have a French press? Do they have a machine? Where is the bag? Put a machine in that exact situation.
Mm-hmm.
Coffee test is a machine is required to enter an average American home, figure out how to make coffee. Find the coffee machine, find the coffee, add the water, find a mug, brew the coffee, push all the right buttons. That's it.
That's actually a good test. Because
I think it's a really good test.
Because everybody does it differently. And to have no instructions. Yeah.
There's so many little variables.
Yeah.
And it has a lot of, like we were talking about, common sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your average person's going to have some level of common sense about what kind of cabinets to look at and things that your robot's not going to have built in.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if the robot's going to like look in the drawers like an idiot.
Yeah. Looking in the fridge for mugs. You're fucking dumb. Get it back on the porch.
Yeah. I actually think that's a good test. Yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, I think that's a good one. I mean, as far as these replacing the Turing test and like how human it is, these are just different benchmarks. And I'm mm-hmm. like, yeah, I see that as a valuable benchmark. I think that's a good one.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think the bar definitely needs to be higher. I just don't know. In my opinion, I don't know. I don't think I believe it's necessary for the robot to be human-like.
Yeah, there are some points in that camp and out of that camp that I agree. When I was doing more research on this, I used to always say, why do they make robots look like humans? They should just make them little boxes. Stop trying to make them look like people. But the more research I did on this, I realized, you know what? The reason, I mean, other than like faces and personalities, that's a separate camp.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about a second. But as far as just making them human-like in form, we live in a world that's built for humans.
Mm-hmm.
The way that our stairs, you know, like the dimensions of stairs, the heights of countertops.
Yeah.
If we want them to do human tasks, they live in a world that's designed for humans. So
that's
it makes
fair.
Sense to just have a machine that's shaped like the thing the whole world is designed for. You know, as far as giving it a personality and things like a face, I don't think we need that.
I don't think we need that. I guess that's where I am. I didn't think about it in terms of the world is built for humans, so the shape should be one that accommodates the world that it's in. So yeah, I do agree with that. I just don't think we need it to reason and think like that us. I think we need it to do specific tasks, and that's the extent of your experience as a robot. I think we don't know enough about our own freaking brains to now deal with trying to make a robot's brain more like our brain.
Yeah.
You know, like more, I just don't think that we need to, that's a necessary step. What for? Like, what are we trying to do with that?
Yeah. I think from like, just from a consumer, like cost and practicality perspective, it's maybe too expensive to have a robot that's capable of all of this that to just do one task.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you want a robot just to do one specific thing, probably it's going to cost too much to be worth it to do one thing. But if you can make a general purpose robot, that's just like having a guy who does stuff for you, that could do the dishes or do laundry or do a number of tasks. And then that's just like, I agree. I would rather have like purpose built machines than a human replacement. But like from the company perspective, it makes more sense to have things that are general purpose.
No, right? I do. I guess that's what I'm saying too. Like, I do agree. I don't mean just like one purpose. I mean, not a purpose that's meant to mimic us as humans. Like you're a machine and you're here
you
to vacuum
in a machine
my floors.
Way,
so yeah. You do things in a machine way. You don't need a human personality to clean my house or to wash my dishes or whatever other tasks that I would want a robot for, like go run errands for me. Like that's not, I don't need you to have a personality to do that. You just need to do that. And that's where I'm like, what is this drive to try to make something else that's human? Just have a baby. You know, like what is this drive to try to figure out all the pieces to make it be like us? There's a narcissism in that, I think.
Yeah. I wonder too, how much do you think that is Silicon Valley projecting versus what people actually want? Do you think people want it to look human, your average person?
I don't think so. I think that freaks us out. I think sometimes there's the camp of people who look at a dog and say, it's smiling. And then there's a camp of people who look at a dog that looks like it's smiling and is freaked out by that. So I think our experience as people is very different depending on what makes you comfortable, what makes you uncomfortable. And I think by and large, things that aren't human but appear human freak us out. It's uncanny valley.
Yeah, I think evolutionarily, anything that's uncanny, we're designed to be like, ugh.
I think it makes us uncomfortable. I think we can grow to become comfortable if it's forced upon us. But I think the first wave is not going to like it.
I think kind of even like we're seeing companies do right now with AI, they keep pushing, this phone's got a new AI chip and this thing's got a new AI feature. And nobody wants that.
Yeah.
Like literally 0% of consumers are like, oh boy, I've been looking for the new AI feature in this, in my washing machine or whatever.
Yeah.
Nobody wants that. But I think there's a disconnect between what's being pushed by the tech companies, what people actually want. I am curious, it'd be all speculation on our part, but once, like, we're already in a world where it's more normal to see self-driving cars and delivery robots, how long does it take for people to normalize seeing these around them? Like, maybe their initial reaction is disgust, but once they're around for a long time and we're immersed in it, do people's opinions change? Or do they stay bitter and mean like Will Smith?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I think that the first wave won't like it. And then over time, because it's just there, it becomes a part of the world. I think social media was the same way. The internet was the same way. Like, it was like, oh, we don't know. You can't use Wikipedia. And now it's like, okay, this is a part of our world. This is part of our life. And we get used to it over the course of a decade or more. So I think that's true for any tech. And I think tech knows that. But what I wanted to drill down on, and this is the doom that I'm feeling right now, is the only reason tech is pushing forward with stuff like, yes, there's the curiosity, just like any other scientist, of like, oh, what's possible? What can we do? We have all this money. But more than anything, they have to grow. It's capitalism. They have to grow. So they're always having to figure out what new idea, what thing. And it doesn't matter if the market wants it.
Yeah.
We're not the market necessarily for a lot of this stuff. It's just like, what can we create that has a buyer? And if your buyer is Apple, then you won. You have made your shareholders happy, and now you've made good on the investment that they've made. And now the chip is in their phone. So they don't give a shit that Andrew and Lauren don't want the chip. Apple bought it. So done. We're done here.
Yeah.
So in the end, it's capitalism that's driving like tech in the way that it is. And I don't know much about China and Japan, but the things that I have seen about how they use tech, it looks to be much more people conscious and not displacement oriented, where they have high speed trains. Love that. Wish we had it. These things are not getting rid of people's jobs. You know what I mean? Like, they don't appear to be getting rid of people's jobs. There seems to be an understanding that tech should be in service of us all and not to get rid of us all. But I could be very wrong. Some listener out there, I'm sure, will tell us. But I feel that in America, we tend to take on tech from a, we don't give a shit about the people. We're just doing this to make the money and we can do a thing and it's cool. So let's do that thing. And oh, by the way, it got rid of 30,000 jobs in its wake.
I think you're 100%.
They just have to learn a new skill. They have to learn a new skill and adapt and move on to a thing. Like there's a certain level of unemployment that the U.S. is perfectly fine with, you know, and I don't know what that critical mass is, but there's a certain percentage where it's just like, yeah, I mean, we have 330 million people. I don't care that 10 million of them are homeless, you know, like, and that's a lot of people. But I think it's all capitalism. I don't think they have to care about you or I not wanting something. They have to care about who's going to buy it. And we're not the buyers.
I think you're 100% correct. I think that kind of like move fast and break things ideology and tech has kind of permeated everywhere. With our wonderful late stage capitalism, there's just less and less regulation, and the regulations that would put the human protections in focus in mind and keep those things in check are less and less in their way.
Yeah.
And it is just about like, let's get products out there as fast as possible. Who cares what it breaks? As long as we get some short-term shareholder value. Maybe some of that was a little bit side note to humanoid robots, but I think that the more consumer they become, the more we'll see those same ethics applied.
Yeah, but I do think that over time, as long as they're in your world, there will be adapting to it. You mentioned earlier about it becoming normal. Do we think it would become normal everywhere? Because I don't want to forget about all the flyover states that probably have never seen any of this.
Well, they will see drones. Actually, that's where a lot of the Amazon and Walmart drones are right now, is like farms.
Oh, okay.
Because that's actually very practical, as much as I don't want to give any credit to the big box stores or Amazon. But it's like, for a lot of these people, they got to like drive an hour into town to go buy a toothbrush or something. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you can literally, I saw a video online where some guy on a farm had this little like Walmart drone fly over and drop a package and it falls and bounces and he picks it up and he just ordered a single Dr. Pepper. But you can
do that. God.
So I think it will reach everyone actually, but in different ways. Mm-hmm. Like, actually, probably in the same regard that construction will be touched by this stuff, farming probably will be. Again, not replacing humans, but there will be some very like robot-y assisted cobots for sure. And while we've got the dumb little drone, dumb little rolling ones with smiley faces and name tags that stop in the crosswalk, they're gonna have the flyover drones.
Yeah,
flyover states in a whole new way.
Whoa.
So actually, yeah, I do think that like autonomous robots are going to touch everyone, but not in the same way. So they're not going to have self-driving taxis in Poughkeepsie, but they will in LA, New York, Chicago, Austin. Yeah, for sure. I mean, they're already there in those places.
Yeah. Well, how many generations do you think we are from completely trusting AI and robots?
That is so hard to say, because I hope, I mean, the correct thing would to never get there. But in terms of the masses, it's funny. You see stories of people overly trusting ChatGPT already in very high risk scenarios. Like, I've read multiple stories of lawyers getting in trouble for using ChatGPT to do a legal briefing, and it was hallucinating and making up fake cases that it was citing. And they're like, what are these made up cases you're citing here? And then they get censured for it. And it's like, yeah, what are you doing? such a risky way to use. But already, you know, those lawyers that have gotten in trouble for that have been like, oh, I didn't know it could lie. So people are already that dumb. When it becomes more normalized, they're just going to get dumber. So I don't know, maybe not that long, but maybe through trial and error, people will learn like, oh, these things fuck up all the time.
Why is the default not it will fuck up?
It seems insane to me that you live in this current era and you're like, oh, this brand new chatbot, I'll have it write a legal briefing for me and send it to a judge. What an idiot. I think those people, I don't know if it went this hard, but those people should be disbarred. That's a level.
I agree with you. I agree with you. Or at least there should be like some serious disciplinary action. I have questions about like, were they overloaded at work and they just tired and they needed help? There's a lot of questions I have.
Yeah. I mean, maybe if you use it in like little, people use it for research. It's getting used in colleges a lot. But the thing is, it bullshits you.
I think we have to use it the same way we were taught to use Wikipedia in the beginning. Like, there was skepticism. It was like, this is not a source. You're not allowed to use this for your papers.
But Wikipedia cites its sources at the bottom of the page and links to it.
ChatGPT,
they're slowly putting features into ChatGPT that allow it to link you to its sources. But a lot of the times, I think people just see like, oh, this has a link to a source. Therefore, it's real.
But then it's like source, Daily Mail.
It's Oh, yeah. It could be a bullshit source, but it could also just be entirely misrepresenting what the source is saying.
Yeah.
It could be saying something that's completely opposite from what the thing it's citing is saying. It just like took something out of context. So, no, I think they're super unreliable. And I don't think they ever will be entirely reliable. I think that they don't have the same human judgment that's required. And I don't think they ever can, because it's at some point all automated based on guessing.
Yeah.
And it can get better and better, but it'll never, ever be perfect. Bad.
I say bad.
All right. Well, let's loop back to the doc. In this tech section, I'm going to get into some actual tech design things that I think are interesting. And this is it's actually very not fucked up. It's very grounded, but also super fucked up at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now companies are coming to find, like, I'm sure you've seen all these like fun fail videos of Boston Robotics dogs eating shit down a staircase and things. It's funny when they like try to do a backflip yeah. and land on their head and shit breaks off. It's great. It makes me feel good, at least, because I am a robot bigot. But they've kind of been finding, research have been finding that a much more efficient way to train these robots is not to have them out in the field going upstairs in real life. What they could do instead is build a virtual environment and then have like little digital robots that have corresponding, you know, weight and physics applied to them that correspond to the robot they're testing, and just run them through virtual tests. And then through like AI and repetition and things, they slowly figure out better movement and training data. So I'm going to show you a video of the nightmare Black Mirror world that is a virtual liminal space of robots running up a million staircases. It's crazy. It is really like Black Mirror. I have to remind myself it's just a computer program, because it looks like a nightmare. Oh yeah, look at this. Just this world of torsoless legs walking around an infinite void, infinite liminal space of staircases and walkways, and all of these robots sauntering around. I don't know if they did this on purpose, but they're walking around slowly like they're depressed, and it's just a pair of legs.
Yeah.
Sadly bumping into each other, walking around, slowly learning how to walk. Thousands of simultaneous simulations, all slowly becoming more efficient. Man, I'm glad I'm not in a simulation of learning how to walk, or maybe we are.
Whoa.
Anyways.
We are in a petri dish somewhere.
Yeah, that would explain everything. Yeah, so anyways, I think that's just interesting that it's like simulations. It makes sense. You know, you can also have them practice making drinks, folding laundry, all those things they're not particularly good at yet, and slowly get better through trial and error, but still kind of creepy and existential.
Mm-hmm.
Quick concept. I don't have much to say about this one, but it's just an important one. Soft robotics is a term for where I think a lot of these robotics are going design wise. Traditionally, mm-hmm. robots are hard, made of metal, but humans are soft. We're squishy. We got muscle and skin. Like if you see a lot of like the new humanoid robots at CES, a lot of them have like cloth on their face and a lot of soft parts. Soft robotics is basically just a field of making robots out of more like pliable, malleable, adaptive material to not just be like these hard metal monstrosities. Anyways, that's just that one. That's a quick one.
How do we feel about it?
I think it's probably necessary. I guess I'm ambivalent, but I
just don't want it to have skin. I just don't want it to have skin.
Oh, okay. Get ready. Get ready
for this next section.
It's going to give you nightmares.
Okay.
Next up, this is actually a nice little crossover with our organoid episode. there are researchers at the University of Tokyo who should, in my opinion, be locked up. they're developing ways to apply a realistic human skin to robot exteriors. Isn't that fun?
No, I hate that. I hate that. I don't like that.
I am not. You know what? I'm not a big fan either. And I think when you see these pictures, you're going to want to burn down the University of Tokyo because it is horrifying. So I'm going to quote from the university's website. Researchers have found a way to bind engineered skin tissue to the complex forms of humanoid robots. This brings with it potential benefits to robotic platforms such as increased mobility, self-healing abilities, embedded sensing capabilities, and an increasingly lifelike appearance. Biohybrid Systems Laboratory has created many robots that walk using biological muscle tissue, 3D printed lab-grown meat, engineered skin that can heal. I don't know much more about that, but I don't like reading that. And more. Are you ready for a little throwback to your previous episode? The idea of an organ on a chip is not new, but it could be useful in research into skin aging, cosmetics, surgical procedures, plastic surgery, and more. Also, if sensors can be embedded, robots can be endowed with better environmental awareness and improved interactive abilities. We believe that creating a thicker and more realistic skin can be achieved by incorporating sweat glands, sebaceous glands, pores, blood vessels, fat, and nerves.
No!
Yeah, I think I speak for us and all of the listeners when I say,
no! Yes, please stop. Why? Why? Can we use this tech toward like good human goods? Like for the good of humanity?
You know what I always think when I look at a humanoid robot? I go, that thing needs sweat glands. Oh, yeah. That needs sweat glands. Okay, now I'm really sorry I'm going to ruin your day by showing you a video. Can you see my screen now?
Yeah.
Kind of how it works is just that like the way our skin sticks to us, they kind of want it just like integrate into the metal here. But here we go. Here's their test.
I don't like it. I can't watch it. I didn't know what I was expecting, but that wasn't it.
Horrifying.
I don't know what I was expecting, but that was not it. Why would they do this?
They're psychos. They're psychos.
Please, Tokyo, stop. We don't need it.
It's so gross. I don't know if I can share it on our Instagram. It's too upsetting.
Oh, gosh. It's upsetting. I hated that. Oh, I hated it. Ew, it's making my skin crawl.
For the audio listener, what we just watched was a little demonstration video where they have basically like a petri dish with two eyes and a mouth and pink, very wet pink skin. And they have little actuators to make it smile and frown.
And, that is the stuff of nightmares.
Yeah, I told you. I warned you.
Oh, gosh. I thought you were being hyperbolic.
No, it's disgusting.
It is disgusting.
This is the worst thing I came across in this research.
Repulsive. Gross. That is what people are afraid of organoids for. Like, that is, it's that stuff. That's why
when you hear the term organoids, that's actually what pops into your head right there.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, God.
Okay. Well,
please,
I'll follow
let's
up by showing
on.
You a fun one. I'll show you a fun one to follow up, a cute one. To go into more sane territory, they're also using classic motion capture just to track humans doing some task over and over. Because they've kind of found that, like, it's sort of doing things the hard way to like try to train a robot to walk or dance or you could just have someone in an X-Sen suit is actually the main one they're using and just do all of these tasks. And then they can replicate it in a way that's not only better because it's the way a human normally does it, but more lifelike because
it's actually shocking that they only now realize this.
Yeah, it seems like such an obvious way to do it. So here's like them taking some motion capture footage. Are you seeing this one?
Okay.
Yeah, this is my favorite. They did it with break dancers. And the robot does a shockingly good job with break dancing. freakishly fluid. And it's just like its motion looked human. There's kind of the kind of like with motion tracking, you're able to cross that barrier between like, you know, a robot's too precise almost to be lifelike. It's like maybe it could do a windmill before and do a backflip, but it's like too perfect. It's not how a human does it. But there's some kind of like a little bit of, I don't even know if you call it error room. There's just a different way that humans move than an optimized machine. And with these motion tracking, they're able to kind of close that barrier and just have its movements get the job done, still accomplish the same task, but while doing it in a form that's a little more human.
Yeah. I actually think I don't want my robot to move too human-like. I want them to move enough to get the top job done. But I like the separation between human and robot. I want that separation.
I 100% agree. I think this will be thrust upon us, though. I think if there are live-in home humanoid robots, they're going to be using this tech to... I mean, I've seen some where... This is pretty recent stuff. I would say stuff I've seen in the last few months. The way they like move and walk in the kitchen is creepy. It looks like, especially when the proportions are right, it looks like there's a guy in a suit.
I don't like it.
Which is weird. Yeah.
I don't like it. I mean, I'm hoping that they're so out of my pay grade that I can never afford one. Then I'll be fine.
That is the main thing. I was going to say we are at the end of this section. The main advances we still need in tech for any of this to be more meaningful in our lives are two things. One, general cost.
Mm-hmm.
And two is actually just advancements in batteries. Because to have it like this very power intensive stuff, robots to go do all this stuff. Currently, like the weight of a battery you need in there and then the efficiency of the battery and how long it can hold a charge is actually a pretty major stopping point for using robots the way we imagine in sci-fi. So, but it'll happen eventually. Battery tech and just overall overhead cost is kind of the two.
Anyway, bottom line, I don't want my Roomba having arms.
Me neither. And especially I'm really drawing the lines at legs. But you know what? This takes us nicely into our next topic, which is uses.
Is there a Roomba with legs?
I'm sure there will be.
Oh, that's disgusting. Go ahead.
I mean, I think like the iRobot type of robot is just a guy that lives in your house and has legs and arms and does all the boring shit for you. So that's basically a Roomba, right?
Yes.
Let's wrap up talking about some of the uses for humanoid robots. And you know what? I'll say maybe I should have even given this as a little hopeful disclaimer at the top. There are some good uses, even for humanoid adjacent ones. There are some positive ones.
Okay.
And I think one of those really positive spaces actually is elder care.
Okay.
I was reading about like this whole elder care advocacy group was talking about how humanoid robots could be used. And it made me think of stuff I never would have even thought of, which is that one of the hardest things about being elderly in an elder home is that you might have to rely on like family members to, you know, help you use the restroom or shower or take a bath and these things that are like, you know, they're kind of humiliating a little bit. They're a little bit dehumanizing to have someone you love take care of you. I don't know, kind of like you're a baby, but we all get there eventually. And you can, in some way, offload those tasks to a robot, potentially. You could have a robot that helps people get on and off of a toilet, get in and out of a bathtub, and not have to have a family member do those things. I think probably the more of the future of those kind of things will be purpose-built machines that are robot-like, but not like a humanoid. You know, there might be like something that's bolted into the floor that helps them get in and out of the toilet in a more economical way than what we have now.
Yeah.
That's probably more likely. But I think there's a wide range of general tasks that would help elders not feel, you know, a lot of elders report feeling like guilt or feeling like they're a burden just for needing help. But we all need help at that time. And I think it would really help give people a level of autonomy in those years and not feel like they're having to burden other people with helping them. At the same time, I think there's a danger for like if a bunch of robots end up running senior homes, that would be not good to take away the human interactions that they're getting and replacing those with robot interactions. So there's good and bad, but I thought that was potentially a very positive use of these sorts of
things. Yeah, I think so. Probably not for everything, but definitely not for everything. But I think so. I think about even in the care facilities, like changing sheets. And because there's a lot of reporting about like, oh, they don't turn people over, so you get bed sores, or they're not changing their bedpan. There's a lot of neglect that happens in these homes. And I don't know what the neglect is based on other than just being terrible humans that are in there. But like, I think about that, you know, changing like the sanitary stuff that maybe a human doesn't want to do, but has to do. Stuff like that would be really helpful.
I think even just from, I mean, both from the functional point, but just even from the mental health point, I think if I'm putting myself in those shoes and I have to have like a nurse come in and feed, you know, help me pee and poop, and it's just embarrassing. And for all humans, it's just, it's kind of embarrassing. And I imagine that would do a lot for mental health of people in elder homes to have less humans involved with the things that they feel vulnerable having to have other people do for them.
You know? Yeah, I definitely think there has to be a balance because you wouldn't want them to feel alienated either.
Yeah, there's good
and bad. I like this use. Okay.
Another adjacent one that I think is kind of interesting. There's a company called Tombot, and they are creating robot dogs that are basically for they're targeting them mostly for people with dementia.
Okay.
Which it's always kind of a weird thing with dementia care. I think some people don't like the ethics of kind of trying to trick people with dementia, but it's, I think positive. Like, have you seen there's like a dementia care facility where it's like a fake 1950s town?
No.
You just let them think that they're in the 1950s. Yeah, it's somewhere in the middle of America. There's this big like 1950s town and it's all indoors. That's made to look like outdoors, and they have like shops and soda jerkers and stuff. And you just fully like these people, let them believe that they're in the 1950s and that's like another time. But what it does for their mental health is incredible. Rather than just being like constantly confused about where you are, just let them live in a place where they feel comfortable.
Yeah.
So a lot of people have very ethical concerns. I understand it, why it's like you're taking these people that are confused and tricking them, but they have dementia.
Yeah, they have dementia, if they don't exhibit harm, then it's fine.
Yeah.
It'd be different if they were freaking out because they realize they're being tricked. But I think more of the freakouts happen when they realize like, oh my God, you're my daughter. What's wrong with me? Yeah. Why can't I, you know, remember that you were my daughter? Like, where did I go?
That'll happen in any setting. So.
Yeah.
But these Tombot dogs, they're a little like, they got fur, they have dog mannerisms. They're totally autonomous. You can't entirely predict what they're going to do because this is an autonomous AI robot. But they have like little sensors that they react to. Like if you scratch on its neck, it'll like lean over here. And they seem to be having pretty good success bringing these into elder homes. And of course, a lot of elder homes do get real dogs to come in and provide comfort, but not everyone can be around a dog because of an allergy or because it's not safe in some way. So I don't know. That was kind of an interesting one that you could kind of emulate the love of a dog through a robot for kind of a certain subset.
I think I'm less into that use.
I also just think that there's mostly you can use real dogs in these settings. They also talk about like PTSD therapy, and there's a lot of reasons, but I feel like maybe it's kind of a specific subset where a robot dog makes sense.
Yeah.
At least make you think there's a lot of kind of out of your normal purview things people are thinking about for this tech. The next one, which I won't talk too long about, workforce. Cobots, like I mentioned earlier. Robotics in the near future will be in food processing, agriculture, construction.
Everywhere.
Yeah, it'll be everywhere. I think the only other thing I think I have to add to that, other than opening a whole rabbit hole on the way robots would be an industry, is saying that we'll probably never be able to fully trust robots in a lot of these roles. And even in a world where like some warehouse job is all humanoid robots walking around and picking up packages, you're still going to have like a human supervisor, which would be a weird job.
Yeah.
You're like the supervisor of a bunch of humanoid robots.
I bet you that guy would fall in love with the robots and some weird shit would happen.
Yeah, he's going to run away with one of them.
Yeah.
And they're going to elope.
But I think, I don't know. We say that.
My name is Jessica Bott.
We say that, but you will have displaced thousands of jobs, I think. I think, mm-hmm. Yeah, you will have displaced thousands of jobs and we'd probably be forced into whatever lower standard comes about because of it.
Which is already happening. It's just, you know, we're talking specifically about like the humanoid replacement, the things where you need hands and legs. That's going to happen. That's going to happen. And
I mean, I've hated right cell checkout since the day it came out.
Oh, yeah. Now we're the robots.
Now we're the robots being filmed every time we walk up to one.
I hate that they're always like trying to catch me and shows me like this top down view and then makes an employee come over. Like, fuck off. I didn't do anything. Fuck off, machine. I'm not trying to steal this can of soup. Fuck off. Anyways, we're going to have to deal with that. I mean, that's already obviously happened in a non-humanoid capacity with like Amazon warehouses and stuff. But you look right now at videos of robots like folding laundry and stuff and they're shit. They're so slow. They're so slow. It's like a joke. But at some point, like I keep saying, at some point, the fact that they're worse won't matter if they're significantly cheaper. Mm-hmm. So something to look forward to. This is a statistic I think is total bullshit. But the University of Oxford predict that AI will take care of up to 40% of household chores in the next 10 years.
10 years? Wow. No.
I think that's ridiculous. No, I think that's stupid. University of
Oxford.
That's
ridiculous. Where are they getting this from?
Yeah, it's also like that you could just make up a number. I doubt they ran any kind of numbers to get 40%. How could you? What would you? It's stupid. I think that's stupid.
10 years?
That's what the University of Oxford is saying, but I think that's dumb and naive. And 40% of everyday chores are going to be taken up by AI in the regular household? No.
No.
I like 1,000 reasons to say no to that. And then the other industries we don't need to talk about. Military. That's its own episode. I don't think I want to do it.
Yeah. That's its own episode. But it's definitely already in play.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously, we already have autonomous things that are not humanoid. But I saw some, I did do my brief research on military stuff. I saw some scary robots that are like, they're like human-like, except they have wheels on their arms and legs. And they're like drive running up mountains, like rocky surfaces, like Segway-like technology to keep them upright. But they're just like going so fast. And I'm like, I don't like that.
The thing that's crazy, that's bad about the military autonomous robots, humanoid autonomous robots, is that they don't have to abide by certain ethics. Because if the goal is war, they can be just really efficient at that. And we're already lacking ethics in our own human military force in a lot of ways. So like that bombing of that circle of just people. What was it, in Yemen? Yeah. So like, that's the scary part, is that they do not have to abide by normal ethics of human life.
Like at the start of the episode when I was saying, the more pressing issue that's going to face us is remote controlled robots and not actually autonomous ones. And that's already a huge problem in military because like drones, did you know that a lot of those like drone drops are actually controlled by an Xbox 360 controller?
Yes.
Because, you know, the kids coming in play Call of Duty and they know how to work one of those and it's got enough buttons. But that creates a mental like blurring of
what you're actually doing. Yeah.
Reality and stakes. It's like you're playing a video game.
Yeah.
It's and that'll become like that, too. It's like you're playing a third person war game, but you're controlling a real thing.
And it's very scary.
Yeah. So, again, that could be its own episode. That's as much as I want to go into military. Basically, that's pretty much the episode. I just wanted to go over some like tech uses, ethics, get us thinking about these things as they become relevant. But I want to end by asking you, if you had to have an autonomous robot for a particular task, and you're going to call it the Doombot, for the pod, what would your Doombot do for you?
I had to have it.
You gotta have one. So you're like, look, I gotta have one of these things. I might as well offload it on this task.
Yeah. Grocery shopping and washing dishes.
Yeah. I think washing dishes is a common answer, actually.
Yeah, that's my least. I hate washing dishes. I don't know what it is. I hate it.
I don't mind grocery shopping, though.
I don't mind it, but like, because I get so busy, it's like, oh, I gotta make time for grocery shopping. So it'd be nice to like send someone there. Mm-hmm. And especially when COVID hit, all of us were pretty heavy on Instacart and stuff like that. And so it kind of like trained me into not physically going to the grocery store. So I think I'm more willing to offload that to a stupid fucking robot.
You know what I find is that a lot of the in-house chores people don't like, I don't mind, like laundry and dishes, because I tend to pair them with like, I don't know, a podcast or music. I always put on something and I kind of like, I don't know. It's kind of like why I got really into pies during COVID and really complicated pies. I kind of like things that are like repetitive and I don't know. There's something cathartic for me about doing things with my hands. But what I don't like is like the chores that require like carrying shit around. If I had one, it would be, it wouldn't be grocery shopping. It would be carrying up my groceries up the stairs. And I would get it to just take out the recycling. Because I get really lazy about that. Like I have a trash bin and recycling bin in my apartment. Mm. And when the recycling gets full, sometimes I end up just putting cans on the counter and eventually I'll take down the recycling and then I'll put those cans back into the bin. I do that almost every week. At some point it gets full and I just start with putting cans on the counter. If I could be like,
oh wait, that's a good point. I would do that too.
Yeah, just like go up and down the stairs for me. Just go do something that takes 60 seconds, but I don't want to do. It'd be like Doombot, take out the recycling. Doombot, carry out my bags from the car.
Yeah.
I would just have it carry stuff up the stairs.
I was raised,
don't use the elevator because it's got to know its place.
It's got to know its place. Use the fucking stairs.
And stay on the porch. Yeah. It's going to live in a little dog kennel on my porch.
I know. But you'll program him to understand that that's where he belongs. So it'll be fine.
Yes, this is my place.
Yes, I will add. So I grew up, I was pretty gendered household. So like I never took out the trash or the recycling. So I actually hate that chore as well. I do it out of necessity, but you're right. I'm looking at a bag that's outside of the bin that has extra things in it. And it's like, just take out the recycling, Lauren. Jeez.
I asked my friend Mark yesterday this same question, see if he had a good idea for the pod. And his first answer was washing dishes also. But then he thought about it more and he had a kind of creative one. He jogs a lot in LA and he says it's always kind of annoying. There's like people walking with their headphones and they don't hear you coming behind them. But you feel rude to be like, hey, on your left every 5 minutes. So you just have like one of those little Boston Dynamics dogs just be rude for him and be like, hey, guy's coming. You're offloading the human interaction to this machine to be like, you can just be like, hey, sorry, I don't control what he says. You know, the robot can be like, hey, get the fuck out of the way.
No, they're going to totally blame you anyway. They're going to blame you anyway.
You know, hey, I'm not even with this thing. We're just both running in the same direction at the same time. All right. Well, that's the episode. Listeners at home, if you got any good uses for what you would do with your Doombot, let us know. Mm-hmm. Be sure to follow us everywhere where you can find Happy Doomsday Pod, except for Twitter. And until next time, Happy Doomsday.
Happy Doomsday.